Please take your seats. The chair now calls this ALA Council Executive Board Membership Information Session to order. This meeting is held in accordance with Policy A.4.2.5.2, which calls for at least one session of the ALA Council to be held with the Executive Board prior to the regular meetings of Council. Any member of the Association may participate in this information session. This is an information session only. No action may be taken here. It is ALA's policy to employ a professional parliamentarian for all of its business meetings at the conference. It is my pleasure to introduce Ellie Mina, ALA's parliamentarian. Also on the platform today are Sari Feldman, ALA President-elect. Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director and Secretary to Council. Joanne Kempf, Director of the Office of ALA Governance. And I would also like to introduce Danielle Alderson, our projectionist. And Lois Ann Gregory Wood, Council Secretariat. This meeting is being captioned for the hearing impaired. Our captionist this midwinter is Heather Theriak. If you wish to take advantage of this service, please be seated where you can see the screens. Before we begin reporting, I would like to call upon AASL Counselor Val Edwards and AASL President Terry Grief to make a brief announcement about ALA-wide school library advocacy campaign going on at this midwinter meeting. Microphone three. Microphone three.
Thank you. Oh, there it is. I'm Val Edwards, AASL Division Counselor. Thank you so much for this time. I just wanted to let everybody know that at the back, there are buttons and talking point cards that we are making available to you, and ask that you would maybe take one and take one to share, and make this available for people to continue the momentum from the school library advocacy work that's already been done by this body. And we want to acknowledge and share our appreciation of the support and efforts that have taken place previously. And we certainly don't want them to peter out. And so we want to continue that momentum. And in return, we are going to endeavor as best we can in our school libraries to provide you in your libraries with knowledgeable and appreciative patrons.
So, I know that Courtney said we can't take action at this meeting, so this isn't an official council action, but this is an action that we'd like you to take as a members and our friends in ALA, and that is to take a button and talk to people that know about school libraries and let them know what we're doing for kids across the United States. So thanks for giving us this time, and have a great meeting.
Thank you. Thank you, Val and Terry. You have received the agenda, ALA Council Document Number 8, for this session. The agenda is also available at the Council Document Pickup Tables in this room. I would like to note one revision to the agenda. The ALA Treasurer's Report, ALA Council Document Number 13, will be presented after the Executive Director's Report and before the Budget Analysis and Review Committee Report, Council Document Number 33. I am now pleased to present my report, which is ALA Council Document Number 21. You do have my report, and the item that I would like to highlight is that on Thursday and Friday of this week, the participants in the Career Development Facilitators Program did their sessions at the ALA headquarters. And I was able to stop in and spend a little bit of time with them during that first meeting. They were very excited, working hard together, and brought a lot of energy. And I think it's going to be something that has a real impact. And I'd like to thank my chapter colleagues for supporting this initiative and for supporting the 22 participants who are in this program. Are there any questions on my report? Thank you. Hearing that there are no further questions, I would like to proceed to the next agenda item. I would like to direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 29 and call upon President-elect Sari Feldman to present her report. Sari?
Thank you, Courtney. I actually want to begin my report by thanking the ALA leadership again. I can't thank them enough, with Courtney Young, Barbara Stripling, and Mario Gonzalez, who are here today, the entire executive board, Keith Michael Fields, and ALA staff, for helping me through this president-elect year, which is demanding and challenging, and there's a great deal of learning happening every day. So I'm very appreciative of the support I get. You have the report in front of you, and I will just highlight in particular the excellent trip that ALA leadership made to New York City to continue the dialogue with New York publishers about the future of digital content. For me, it was a continuation of the great work that's being done that was done by the Digital Content and Libraries Working Group over the next 3 years, and what we can expect to see happening over the coming 3 years to help advance the relationship between publishers and access to our communities. So I was very appreciative to be part of that discussion. I also had a meeting this morning to continue the development of my own presidential initiatives. I'll be working with my advisory group, and I look forward to presenting them to and sharing them after ALA Annual in San Francisco. Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sari. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 23 and ask Keith Michael Fields, ALA Executive Director, to present, and Council and Secretary of Council, to present his report. Keith?
Great. You've all had an opportunity to see Council Document 23. I'm just going to highlight a couple of items which lead the report. First of all, as you know, on Sunday, tomorrow, we will be providing an opportunity to do a joint planning session here as part of the council session, which Courtney will be leading. We are also going to be having a similar opportunity for the Planning and Budget Assembly members to gather together to also discuss future directions for the association as well. We have a lot of groups that are currently engaged in conversations. We're very much interested in everyone's best thinking on our future efforts in the areas of advocacy, intellectual freedom, and professional leadership development. And we'll be working within the framework of the programmatic priorities that have been developed over time and supported by Council to create a new framework plan for the association that we'll be bringing back to you in annual conference. You will start to see some draft documents that will begin circulating in probably second week in April. We have some sessions that are going on at ACRL. People have asked if I want to provide individual input. There's a Connect group, and we really welcome anything you want to give us. The last time we undertook strategic planning, I think the last round of comments we received were about 2,000 comments from individual members, and we look very carefully at them, and I think have done a pretty good job on the last two planning cycles on bringing together the many facets of the association into what I think have been very effective and visionary plans. So strategic planning is underway. The school library campaign, you heard a little bit about. I'm going to just add to what's in my written report. We are being told by the Washington office that there are plans underway in both the House and the Senate to move forward on the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. I'll speak personally, perhaps even beyond this, as a former school librarian at one point in my life, that what happened to school libraries under the No Child Left Behind legislation, I think, has seriously damaged our educational system by undercutting the services provided to students by an adequate and a school library media program with a certified library media specialist. This is going to be a historic opportunity. I think No Child Left Behind has been in place for 15 years, going on 20. This bill will probably, if it gets through, be good for a decade. We absolutely have to get all hands on deck to push to try and make some progress so that we have some structure in place at a national level that recognizes the fact that without a library, a student is not going to get a good education. Again, I don't want to go on at too great a length here, but we are really going to need every single one of you to step forward, and we're going to have to move quickly. I had the pleasure this morning of chatting very briefly with Senator Dick Durbin, who stopped in for the legislative update. He asked how many people were going to be here. I said, well, 11,000. He said, with 11,000, you can get anything. So I think the key is if we work together, I think we can make a difference. We have language in the Senate bill that would provide for an effective school library media program and requirements and funding to support it. We are not going to have that in the House bill. I think that's a given. But my understanding is that the two very different bills may go to conference. And a lot is going to be fought out. Many will win. Many will lose. But we need to come out of this with a guarantee that students are going to have the opportunity that they need. Okay, sorry for going on. The last thing I'll just mention is the conversation on diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is being held. As you know, we've got a group that was appointed by President Barbara Stripling and is looking at just diversity across the association, across the profession, in our communities, and the role that libraries play in that. And we're really expecting that out of that will come really a new vision of how we can more effectively put our diversity values into action as an association and as libraries. So I do hope that you'll join in the conversation. There are a series of surveys that are being issued, and there will be several of them sort of checking back with people over time. So the first one, I think, is February 15th as a deadline, and then there will be others periodically as this group undertakes its conversations and plannings. I think other than the Martin Luther King Jr. Sunrise Celebration, hope to see everyone there. I will then conclude my brief overview and ask if anyone has any questions.
Microphone number 4.
Thank you, Director Fields, for that very upbeat report.
It's Bernie.
Bernie Margolis, Counselor at Large.
Thank you.
I was trying to be anonymous. I'm sorry.
Forget it.
Now, sometimes when you have a tough question that you're asking, you really, should I be asking this? Keith, it seems to me that not a day goes by that I don't either read in the paper or see on some of the other media that a major corporation or a government agency or somebody important has been hacked. And I'm wondering whether there has been any assessment of ALA's vulnerability around this world of cybersecurity. And if there hasn't been, are we going to consider that? And if it has been, what steps have we taken to implement improved security for our assets, for our data resources?
Great. Thank you for asking that question. Let me say that I am, as everyone is well aware, not the director of ITTS, and I am going to conclude what I'm going to say just by suggesting that I would be happy, with your permission, to maybe send a little bit more detailed information out to counselors as a follow-up to my comments. The answer is yes. We have regularly conducted security risk assessments. I would have to say that we have been the target of a number of denial of service attacks, for those of you that are aficionados of hacking. We at one point had a virus that had locked down a number of terminals and was demanding that we send money to Russia, and we were able to stop that incursion, and no money has been sent to Russia. And so that the answer is yeah, we're, and let me put it this way, ALA is in many ways a very high profile association, so we are a tempting target. So let me say that we are continuously working on this. It's a challenge, and I, at this point, you know, we are continue to be a step ahead. We do have specific procedures related to credit card information that puts them in a position where they're much more secure than instances in which they've been downloaded in other situations. And I will, with your permission, send just a very brief report that will amplify a little bit on this. But I think we are trying to take every prudent step to make sure that we're minimizing risk.
Microphone 3.
Mary Biblow, Counselor at Large. Keith, I believe you did give us some information on the about this the ALA Center for Civic Life, and also the Task Force for Equity and Diversity in your report in December. However, I didn't have any idea on how it was established, and that's how come I'm here today. But you did answer that question when you said Barbara Stripling established that committee. Now, does it consist of a number of people or just a select few?
No, and I may call on Courtney to help me out a bit on this. The committee was chosen with a broad intent to provide for broad representation, and we did have nominations from a number of groups. As you know, the formation of the committee came out of a challenge from the Black Caucus about the situation in Florida. We now have situations in St. Louis and in other places. And as a result, that was really formed collaboratively to make sure that we really had good representation. Courtney, if you want to.
Yes. Yeah, that the task force for, I always get the, everyone calls it something a little bit different, but it's equity, diversity, and inclusion. That task force was formed by Barbara Stripling, and she and I collaborated on making appointments. The co-chairs are Trevor Dawes, who's currently the immediate past president at ACRL, and Martin Garner, who's currently the chair of the Committee on Professional Ethics and is also an active member in the GLBTRT. Each one of the ethnic affiliates has a member who they identified that they wanted to serve on that task force. The GLBTRT also has someone, Social Responsibilities Roundtable, the ASCLA Accessibility Assembly also has a member, and then there are a few sort of members at large. I believe that we also have a representative from the council, from a council committee as well, and I apologize that I don't have all of the specifics, but this was something that was done in a very collaborative and open manner with a lot of conversation. People were selected by groups to be represented on this group, and there will be a report from the task force at council, I think it's council 2.
Council 2 of this, Midwinter or what?
Yes, yeah. Yes. They'll be giving us a report. It could be Council 3. I'm not 100% sure, but it's either Council 2 or Council 3.
Okay.
It's Council 3. Thank you.
Thank you.
The other question I have is it going to be a permanent committee? And if so, is it going to be funded? And is the committee going to report to council as as any other committee, like standing committee?
At this point, it is not a standing committee. It is a task force, and their charge does run through annual conference 2016 in Orlando. And I think that the work that they're doing will probably include recommendations as to whether or not this does need to be some type of standing committee, what might make the most sense in terms of a standing committee, what the makeup of that standing committee would be in charge. So I'm like you, I look forward to their first report to council.
Okay, the only thing I'm confused about is the Center for the Civic Life. I don't fully understand that.
And Mary, Center for Civic Life? Center for Civic Life, right? Mary Gigas, is Mary here? There, I see Mary. I think probably Mary can give you a best answer because she's been really very actively involved with that group. And it is related to our community engagement initiative as an association.
Microphone four.
Civic Life comes out of a research grant to ALA from the Kettering Foundation. And that's the way they describe, the Kettering Foundation describes clusters of people who are really focused on deliberative discourse and civic engagement. It has been currently being, the work initially of the research project and then subsequently of continuing community engagement is being carried on in a variety of places. There is a member initiative group focused on member engagement, and they're doing a great deal of that work, and it's also being picked up by various groups across the association. So it really is, to a large extent, a mechanism for pushing out to any member who's interested information about deliberative discourse, about civic engagement projects, about strategies for effective civic engagement or community engagement. That's what I can tell you. Questions?
No, not that from her, but I just wanted to say, is there any way that other people who, if they wish to volunteer, or if I would like to submit a name for one of these people to be included in this type of, you know, committee, would that be possible? Or is it just a select committee formed by Barbara Stripling? You know, and maybe even I've been involved in, I'm not trying to project myself to be on any committees at this state of life, But I've been involved in and doing things where diversity is concerned. I started here in ALA. I was very active in the NAACP and raising questions about diversity. And so I was wondering if there was any possibility, if there was someone else or from the group or from ALA, if there was any way they could be a participant of such a committee.
All I can say at this point is if you have, if anyone is interested, let's discuss it. I think I can't speak on behalf of the chairs, but I think that they could figure out some way to engage and involve anyone who is interested. That would be my
We'll make sure to have Martin Gardner and Trevor Dawes contact you and speak with you during this conference, okay, so that there are opportunities. Right.
Okay, because I was very active in the Black Caucus and very one of the leaders there in bringing about the question of diversity here in ALA.
Yeah.
So therefore, I have a background of here. But again, I'm not clamoring and dying for recognition or want to be on the committee, but I just want to open the door. Thank you.
Thank you. Microphone four.
Barbara Stripling, ALA immediate past president. I wanted to respond to you, Mary, because I think what you bring up is exactly what we were talking about in our committee today. We had a meeting. It was an open meeting, and actually there were a number of people who came to sit on the sidelines, and they actively participated in the meeting. So those meetings are open, and we really welcome participation. The survey that was mentioned is trying to get the climate of what's going on in ALA. It is an online survey open until February 15th. We will have surveys before every conference, and that is a way that we are trying to draw in participation of every ALA member. Tomorrow, there is an open conversation from 1 to 2:30 here at ALA about diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's a community conversation. We will be taking notes. We will have facilitators. And it is a chance for the committee to gather widespread input from our members so that as we continue to make plans, we can incorporate everything that our members are saying to us. And we're trying to have a very, very open, transparent process. If there's ever any moment when you are wondering what's going on, if you email Trevor or Martin, they will get back to you because they are magical chairs. Thank you.
Is there no further questions? Thank you. I now direct your attention to ALA Council Document Number 13 and call upon ALA Treasurer Mario M. Gonzalez to present his report. Mario.
Thank you, Madam President. It's a pleasure to be with you here again. Welcome, colleagues, counselors, friends, members. My role here today is to share with you what 2014 looked like from a financial point of view. So I hope you all have a copy of CD13. And we'll see that on the second page, what I've done is different from previous presentations is that I am comparing a year-to-year budget and revenue to expenses. I know we're all very interested in comparing actuals to budgets. Let me go back. But I think it would be good for us to see revenue trending, how the organization is doing, how much money we've made, how much money we've spent, did we spend too much, did we bring in enough to do all of the wonderful work that we do in the organization. As you can see from here, this is by categories and dues is where the membership goes, and you will see that even though we had a loss in membership, we only had a $64,000 drop in money related to dues for 2014. We don't want to lose any money, but $64,000 is very proportional to a much larger loss in membership, which was hovering around 16%. I'll talk about that later. Subscriptions relate to publications. The meetings and conferences did very, very well, and that was almost entirely due to Las Vegas. Las Vegas was a very successful conference. I had a bet with Barbara Stripling about how much money we were going to make, and I'm glad to say I won, but I wouldn't make that public. The short-term investments and long-term investments are the interest of those funds, and as you can see here, we made $4,608 for the short-term, and the market did very well with the long-term for $224. So overall, our total revenues increased by $990,812. When we get to consultants, expenses, outside services are consultants. The travel increase is due to two conferences that were held by two divisions. Oh, we're there. PLA and ASL. When we look at post-retirement benefits and other post-retirement benefits, we have to look at a short term first and then a longer term, and both of those are actually doing very well for the organization. In 2017, there will be a mortality rate that will be done in the United States. We're all living longer and healthier, and that's a wonderful thing, so we'll see our length of life increasing. At the same time, we're also going to see our obligation to retirees increasing. So it would be interesting to see how that table comes out. It hasn't been done in 10 years. The net revenue of revenues versus expenses for ALA, we actually made $3,604,000 more than in 2013, because in 2013, you recall that it was not a good year for us, and we closed with a loss of $519,000 in operating funds. So with the $3,085,000 and $519,000, we actually came out ahead with $3,604,000. I'll go to the general fund revenues. Here you will see dues, and they would be related directly to the divisions in round tables. I want to mention what miscellaneous is, because I'm the kind of person that if miscellaneous is bigger than the other categories, I want to explain what's in there. Miscellaneous includes royalties, of which $1.1 million of that money comes from royalties. It's also fees and the sale of seals we have for our publications. In the general fund expenses, I want to highlight a few things in communication. We've put a concentrated effort on PIO and advocacy, renovations that have taken place in the plant fund. The overhead recovery was also due to two conferences. So the general fund summary is that we are $529,000 more than the 2013 budget. And that is the final figure of the closing of the general fund. Last year, we closed this with $76,000 in the red. Many of us have interest and concerns and questions about publishing. So here is a snapshot of what happened in 2014 with publishing. ALA Edition contains the Huron Street Press. It contains Neil Schumann. So there are other houses embedded in ALA Editions. $399,000 in the red is actually good compared to what we had in 2013. Products and promotions include graphics. Digital resources is RDA and Guide to Reference. And then in the final number, publishing made $943,656, and that's after taking $500,000 reduction in obsolete inventory, which we had to do. Otherwise, it would have been $1.4 million. Meeting and conferences, again, Las Vegas did very, very well for us. We ended up with a net revenue of $946,174. Division revenues, we did very well, $2,091,000, better than 2013. Again, the two division conferences had a lot to do with that, and the miscellaneous here are the same categories that I mentioned to you earlier. The division expenses are pretty much stated here. We had lower outside services, publication costs came down, and we ended up with $637,942, better than 2014. So, revenues versus expenses, the net revenue was $1,004,553,831 for the division, more than 2013, where we had a loss of $69,000. Many of you have asked and are interested in looking at the division by division. I'm not going to go through all of them. You have that information here. But as you can see, PLA with $1,292,000 in net revenue, that was a conference. And then ASL with $160,337, that was a conference. PLA made $1.6 million more than in 2013. And in 2013, AASL was $380,000 less. ALSC is doing very well. ALSC and YALSA are the two divisions that have a growing membership in the association. Roundtables did better than 2013 by $18,233. It's a 14% increase. And this slide is one that I want you to really concentrate on, because this slide shows the health of the organization. We have $80,368,000 and change in our assets for 2014 and liabilities of $41.7 million, with a net asset of $38.6 million. In the change from that in 2013 was that the assets now are $4.9 million higher, liabilities $2.9 million lower, and our net assets increased by $7.9 million, with an increase of 26%, which is really wonderful considering that we were not in such a good place in 2013, and this is how we ended in 2014. And a lot of this, of course, had to do with just amazing market conditions and market responses and give back in the health of the market, financial markets. Total ALA assets, this is a rundown of where all of the assets for the organization are and in what categories. This year, we did not have to do a write-off of goodwill for the Neil Schumann publication, so you will see that in the goodwill, we did not have to write that down. Last year, we did by $800,000. And we are now in grants receivable waiting for grantors to pay some of the money that are due to us through the grants that we've received. And that's where you see in grants receivable. We wrote off some tangibles due to the acquisition of Neil Schumann. And that will also happen every year, because when you buy this podium 10 years ago, it's worth less 10 years later. So there's a depreciation to this, and we have to write that down. Total liabilities. We have an account payables. We're paying bills faster, more efficiently. So we did have a savings there. Publication subscriptions, member services are deferred revenue that come to us. We are getting out of the leasing capital items. So we will look into going into purchasing these rather than leasing them. So that's going to be coming off the books. And you can see the numbers are already lower this year. Our post-retirement looks very, very healthy. And our long-term debt, which we borrowed to purchase Choice and Neil Schumann, is down to $8.1 million out of a $10.1 million loan. This chart just graphically shows what I mentioned before as the strength of the organization. We have improved from year to year, and our net asset balance currently is at $38,662,025. I want to thank you for your attention. I'll be happy to take questions. However, before I do that, I would like to thank the staff of the finance departments, particularly Keith Brown, Denise Moritz, Brad Jean, and Joanne Lee, as well as Latasha Bryan, who is now helping in the office, but also to Keith, Michael Fields, and Mary Geekes for guiding me through the budget and giving me detailed answers to questions that helped me through this. Lastly, but not least, I want to give a special thank you to Greg Galloway, and I don't know if Greg is here. Is Greg is here? Okay, we'll do it in absentia. This is Greg's Galloway last conference as he's retiring from the finance department of ALA, and I really wish him all the best. He's been a tremendous resource and help to me and to all of the members of the association, and I want to pay my due respects to him for helping us all these years.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Gonzalez? No questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
At the 1987 midwinter meeting, the ALA Council voted that BARC, the ALA Budget Analysis and Review Committee, should report to Council at each ALA midwinter meeting and ALA annual conference. I refer you to ALA Council Document Number 33 and call upon Patricia A. Wan, Chair of BARC, to present her report. Pat?
Thank you very much, Courtney. It's a pleasure to be in front of you again and also to follow the Treasurer's report, who was able to talk with us about the financial health that the association enjoys. I want to point out to you that the report from BARC this time is in two parts. There's a narrative and then the PowerPoint slides as well. So I certainly will not be covering all the numbers on the PowerPoint slides, and I leave those to your study at a later time if you wish. I also want to point out that the report today to Council and the Executive Board and to membership includes the report to the Planning and Budget Assembly. The Planning and Budget Assembly meets on Sunday afternoon, and we will entertain questions about the report at that time, but we will not repeat this report to that body. So my report today has two major parts. The first is an update for fiscal 2015, and the second part is a report to you about various activities that BARC has been undertaking over the last few months. I always like to draw your attention to a few facts about the framework in which we work in the budget world of ALA. Our current fiscal year is 2015, and it began September 1 of 2014 and will end on August 31st, 2015. And when we're at this time of the budgetary year, we are actually looking at three different fiscal years. You've just heard Mario report about the closing of the previous fiscal year. We've been working on that. We're in the middle, or I should say about 4 months, a little more than a quarter through the current fiscal year, and we're already underway, particularly with staff involvement, in planning for 2016. So this is a very busy time of the year for looking at budgets. We have something called the budgetary ceiling that we have to determine every fiscal year, and it includes the net assets plus our anticipated revenues for the upcoming fiscal year, and that's called our budgetary ceiling. You may remember, those of you who were counselors and here at annual conference, we voted on a budgetary ceiling in Las Vegas. And since Las Vegas, we had to look at the numbers there and do a few recalculations. Not surprisingly, for example, we received updated information affecting the general fund. Several of our division boards recommended some changes in their budgets for fiscal 2015, and some additional grants were received. So we had to tweak that budgetary ceiling, and the executive board did that in October. This is also a good time to look at the way we account for our operating budget in the association. These are the five major accounts that we track throughout an operating year so that we can monitor what's actually happening. And now I want to spend just a few minutes on the first quarter highlights for 2015. The first quarter happened, those first 3 months of the fiscal year, September, October, November, and that's very early in the fiscal year, but nonetheless, we always look at it. The total revenues for ALA budget all across all the accounts was $8.8 million, and total expenses were $9.9 million. So there was an excess of expenses over revenues. And for the first quarter, that is very typical, because we pay upfront for some services that we incur costs against throughout the year. For example, auditing services and insurance, et cetera, come up front. And also, our revenues come through at different times. Our primary revenues come from conferences, membership dues, and publishing. And each of those revenue sources has its own annual cycle. We also saw some difference in our cash and investment and our endowment fund, and we'll be hearing more about the endowment fund, but the big news there is that we topped $40 million, and I will try not to steal too much of Rob's thunder there. Okay, moving to the general fund, again, that's the big, the first account line that I showed you a few minutes ago. The general fund revenue was $5 million, and the general fund expenses $5.9 million. And looking at the expenses here, we've got a slide that shows us actually two comparisons. If you let your eye rest on that middle column, November 2014, that gives us the revenues, expenses, and net revenue for this current fiscal year. To the left, column 2013 compares it to the previous fiscal year. And then to the right, the variance column compares the actual November 2014 to the budget, what we thought might be happening. And you can see from year to year, the net revenue is very, very close. And about what we expect. I want to focus now for a few minutes on divisions. This is the aggregate of all 11 divisions plus choice. Those all fall into the division account budget. And we had a $2.8 million revenue and expenses of $3.1 million. Moving to the same comparison here, we see, again, looking at that middle column, November 2014 compares it to the previous year, and the budget and variance columns show us how we've measured up against the budget, which, as you know, is our best estimate made before the beginning of the fiscal year. So again, these actually compare very close to one at two year from year to year. Actually, an improvement for 20. An increase in the deficit in from 2014, but there are many factors that fall into this, and all in all, the divisions, like the entire association, have been reining in expenses in cost-cutting efforts and efficiency efforts. I want to move us to the roundtables. Revenues at $52,455 and expenses at $18,448. And then we have the same comparative figures here that we offered earlier for the other accounts, showing the variations and the comparison of the 2 years. The budgets for the ALA's 20 roundtables are very different than the budgets for divisions. As we pointed out in the past, roundtables are run by very active member volunteers, and they receive very modest staff support. I'm going to move us now to report on BARC's response to the midwinter resolution from a year ago in Philadelphia, the resolution to allow programs at ALA midwinter meetings. This was referred to BARC for an assessment of the physical impact of allowing meetings at midwinter meeting, allowing programs at midwinter meeting. And BARC consulted with the conference committee on this important question. After considerable conversation and consultation, the BARC concluded that it is unable to support the resolution to allow programs at midwinter meetings, and recommended, in fact, to the executive board that the midwinter meeting maintain its current footprint. Let me explain briefly, and this is also explained in the narrative, the cost of actually presenting programs in terms of the meeting space and the audiovisual support were significant, but an easier cost to estimate than many of the other costs that we discussed. And some of the other costs were much higher, or anticipated to be much higher. For example, the costs associated with program development by members, committees, divisions, roundtables, and staff were seen as very considerable, and in both staff and volunteer time. The potential negative impact on program planning for annual conference was considered if major programs were also being planned for the midwinter meetings. And one of the very significant things that came out of these discussions is the very valuable size of the midwinter meetings. If we were to lose the size and the agility that the smaller footprint offers us, we anticipated there being budget and financial consequences. The midwinter size allows the association to be a testing ground for innovation and creative approaches to meeting member needs, and we thought this was a very important model to maintain. There were some other things, including the attendance at exhibits if there were major programs superimposed or sponsored at midwinter. So BARC concurred with the conference committee that these impacts were difficult to quantify, but they were potentially very significant. And we are aware that the conference committee has some other models to propose, and support them when they, if those programs are cost neutral and they meet the purpose of the midwinter meetings. I would like to finish here with just a few words about our efforts to educate and inform our members about finance aspects of the association. We have, as I've said several times now, 5 webcasts available to you to consult if you are undertaking or have financial obligations or just simply interested. We are in how we operate. We are designing a 6th webcast that will be about how to plan a budget for a special event like a pre-conference or an institute or a workshop. We hope that that will be developed by annual conference. In addition, we are putting the final parts together for a financial handbook, a compilation of 30, 35 pages or so that will be serving as a resource for the entire membership. That should be out sometime this spring and available at the on the treasurer's page. We offer a best practices sessions on Friday afternoon every year of midwinter conference that's open for questions and discussion about budgetary and financial aspects. And one last time, please, I invite you, urge you to visit the treasurer's page. You'll find a wealth of information on that page regarding ALA finances. This concludes my report. Thank you very much for your attention. And I'm happy to entertain questions if we have time.
Microphone three.
Al Kagan, personal member and CERT counselor. I'd like to ask a question about how BARC is currently handling resolutions that are referred to it. Pat, as you know, the CERT has proposed a resolution that we sent to your committee for this meeting, and we were told that you would not consider looking at it until it was formally sent by the council. And it seems to me that I remember many times in the past when resolutions have come to the body at the council that the report has already been made about those resolutions. So I would just like to ask you what your current practice is and what we can expect for the future. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. BARC is a member or is a committee of council, and when council refers resolutions to us, we of course consider them. In the 4 years that I have served on BARC, I never recall a member-initiated resolution coming to BARC for our consideration before council has already reviewed it and agreed or asked BARC to look at the financial ramifications. When we do receive resolutions from council, they often involve other units. For example, when we received the resolution about allowing programs in midwinter meetings, we knew we would need to consult with another standing committee, the conference committee. That often happens with resolutions. So I received your resolution and shared it with BARC, but we have not acted on it.
Thank you, Pat. At the 1985 midwinter meeting, council voted that the endowment trustees be invited to report to the council at each midwinter meeting and annual conference. I now refer you to ALA Council Document Number 16 and call upon Rodney Hershberger, Chair of the Endowment Trustees, to present his report. Rod?
Thank you, Courtney. Technically, I'm the senior endowment trustee, and I think that's because I actually am the oldest one, finally. That takes some getting used to. Thank you.
Thank you.
I always want to recognize and thank Keith Brown. He serves the trustees tremendously, is a great guy to work with, a good colleague. I won't say I contribute, but I'm, you know, more the pretty face up here, and he does most of the work. So thank you very much, Keith. I always appreciate what you do for us. Next slide. Now, this seemed like a good idea at the time, but after the last 2 months, I'm not sure quite where we are. January was particularly tough, but the endowment did reach $40 million late in the August or September, and the current group of trustees want to take all the credit for that. All the other trustees in the past had a chance to get to that, but they didn't do it, but we did. This was a celebration. We had our September meeting. Robert Newland, whom you'll recognize there and who's always gave much better reports than I do when he was senior trustee, hosted us at the Library of Congress Law Library. And so that's where we are on that one. So it's an important milestone, and we know we're going to be up and down the investing world, but the bigger an endowment gets, the more investing options it has, potentially. And so when this gets up to $50 million, it'll give us a chance to diversify even more. You have this report. I'm not going to read all these bullet items to you, but 14 was a good year for equities. It's damned hard to make money in fixed income because interest rates are about zero. And that's good on the buyer borrowing side, not so good on the money-making side. Bullet point three I want to speak a little bit about. We all like to go to the pump and pay less, and our heating oil and what have you is less. But, you know, it's not all roses when oil prices drop that fast, that quickly. It costs $60 a barrel for Russia to produce oil. So they're losing $15 a barrel now. I don't think anybody wants to see widespread unrest in Russia. Alaska is broke because it has no income other than taxing oil severance. And again, that was rated at very high. Texas is probably going to follow, although I haven't read anything. With lower oil prices may slow down alternative energy development sources because they may not seem as economically viable. And it will hurt some states and some communities because these are very high-paying jobs, and the multiplier effect throughout the community will go in reverse if some of these jobs are lost. You know, you've read about what's going on in Greece and Europe, and it's particularly unsettled there, and that will have an effect on our markets as well. These are some of the many indices around the world that we look at. You'll see that our total return this year was 7.7. I was a little disappointed in that. I hoped we would get into double digits, but you know, that Shanghai one needs to be put in perspective because it was way low last year. So just because it jumped up 50% doesn't mean it's great over a 5 or 10 year period. But we use these to compare ourselves. We're not showing you, but we also use what's called an Akubo study to compare ourselves. That's the National Association of College and University Business Officers, and we compare fairly well with them, and we look over our several year periods of time. So the association in 2007 celebrated getting above 30 million, and then we had a real kick in the pants the next year, which you remember, but now we've gone back up and we're over 40. So I think our long-term rate of return is certainly acceptable given our risk tolerance and so forth. These next two slides are just to show you where the money is invested, and the trustees operate on an investment policy guideline, 20-some pages on what kind of investments we can make on behalf of the association and where we can place those and so forth. So we don't get into anything real exotic. We don't buy junk bonds, for instance, and some other things that are higher risk. And this slide shows our rate of return by quarter. You can see the total was 7.7, up and down a little bit. And here's where we got to 40 million. Interest in dividends are, you know, quite important. And we'll talk about this in a minute, but the trustees authorize a payout of 5% of this total. And that's about $2 million that's available to ALA and its divisions if they choose to draw it as part of the budgeting and expending patterns. And the interest certainly some of that goes to pay the Spectrum scholarships, which we all support. These next two slides just show the areas where the trustees can invest funds: equities, fixed income, and then these other things. We have one real, excuse me, we have one hedge fund, fund of funds that we've been divesting over a few years because that didn't work out. So, you know, anyone who does anything in investing will tell you that diversity is very, very important over a long term, and we try to do that as well as we can. The trustees have concentrated more on asset allocation in the last few years rather than individual manager performance, but that does not mean that we don't evaluate managers, because we do look at them and see how they're performing to some of our benchmarks. In September, Bill Gross, who is the U.S. bond guru for many years, founder of PIMCO, did a very unexpected runner and took his business to Giannis. And we watched that for a while, but then later on, as withdrawals kept mounting up, the trustees moved some of the fixed income from PIMCO to Loomis Sayles. I just mentioned that we're in liquidating the endowment fund, replaced one manager with another. And this last one, large cap stocks into real assets, that just means they're going into real estate investment trust in this case. Again, nothing very exotic. Keith and I have put down some of the things that might impact the market this year. We certainly don't have any crystal ball or any oracles to look at. I think a lot's going to be more dependent on what happens outside this country than inside this country. I think the Republicans are probably going to behave themselves and not try to shut down the government ahead of presidential elections next year and so forth. So, strong dollar, again, is a mixed bag. Makes imports cheaper, makes exports more expensive. It'll bring more money investment in this country, though. So. And then the final slide, I think Mr. Kagan asked at our Las Vegas conference for the Merrill Lynch managed funds, which ones hold fossil fuels in them. This is the list, and you can look it up on the website. Keith and I did not find any fossil fuel holdings in their top 5 or 10 holdings that you'd see on that website. So, but feel free to look for yourselves. And that concludes my report.
Are there any questions for Mr. Hershberger? Microphone 3.
Jim Kuhn, Counselor at Large. Question about this last slide and then a follow-up question. That you have identified no fossil fuel holdings in this portfolio doesn't mean...
That's not what I said. In the top 5 or 10 holdings that they show on their website.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that may not change tomorrow, correct?
Of course not. Yeah. It may not mean that they don't hold 0.5%. It's just their top holdings. But their top holdings usually add up to quite a bit.
Thank you. Uh-huh. So my follow-up question then relates to... an earlier comment that you made relating to the 20-odd pages of guidelines used by the trustees mm-hmm. for investing in the endowment. And I wonder if you could speak a little bit about issues related to socially responsible investing, corporate responsibility in as it relates to the guidelines that appear in those that 20-page document, and whether that document is something that's available to the membership to review as well.
The last question first, I'm sure it is. I don't know where it is, but Keith Brown could probably tell us where it is. A few years ago, the trustees, I don't remember when this was, it's been quite a few years, did devote $200,000 to something called, it was another name, but it's now the Aerial Mid-Cap Growth Fund Socially Responsible Index. And that's about, it's almost $1 million now. So it's about 2.5% of the portfolio. We always also ask our managers and mutual funds to be aware of, I think, something called the Domini 1000 list of socially responsible companies. But beyond that, that's the extent of it. There is some language about our values and social responsibility in this document.
Microphone 4. Microphone 4.
Chris Corrigan. Chris Corrigan, DCLA chapter counselor. We're about to vote over midwinter over divestment, and I was just wondering, I don't know much about portfolios, and I was hoping you could educate us as to, is it possible to single out specific companies within the large cap managers to divest from? Is that so? Looking into the crystal ball, if that were something we actually did, and you went to the large cap managers and said divest from et cetera, X stock, is that even possible?
I'll answer that question this way. That's such a hypothetical that I'll refer again to the investment policy guidelines. We do not invest in individual stocks. If the executive board brings something to the trustees in the form of a request or directive, the trustees will consider it within the investment policy guidelines.
Okay. Thank you.
Microphone 4. Microphone 3.
Hi, Nan.
Shorter than the microphone. Nan Hilliard, ALA member. I was just curious, and as a charter member of the Legacy Society, curious about sources of income for the endowment. The contributions were, the net was $519,000. Do you have off the top of your head, or is there a place we could look? I'm curious what percentages of that income was from, you know, the members' donations of $5, $10, $100. Did you get any big requests? Just curious.
I have no idea where that money came from, but maybe Keith or Greg do, so.
I think we could provide that information.
Yeah, well, Keith said he could provide it to council. So thank you. Mm-hmm.
Microphone 3.
Al Kagan, personal member, CERT counselor. I'd like to refer you to Exhibit 9, and I think that I can say myself I don't completely understand the way this works, and I have a suspicion that others may not either. The first thing under traditional asset allocation under small portfolios is equities. And could you explain what that is? I thought that was individual stocks. Now, I understand that we have managers, and the managers have various roles and have different strategies, and that we hire them to just do their strategies and get a return. But I also thought that there was a list of individual stocks, because I actually found in my files from some years ago a report from the endowment trustee showing individual stocks. So I am not at all clear about if the portfolios include individual stocks or if they don't. And could you explain what that equities is? Thank you.
Sure. Equity, of course, is ownership of corporations that are generally publicly traded. The trustees do not invest in individual stocks, which I said earlier. We invest in mutual funds, and we invest in managers who may buy individual stocks. But we do not own, the endowment does not own any individual stocks. And to my knowledge, it never has.
Can I just follow up? So that means that an individual manager will have a portfolio, and that portfolio would not have individual stocks?
No, of course it has individual stocks in it, but that's what a manager does, aggregates the investments in corporations for his or her portfolio and manages them that way, or in an index fund, they'll mimic the S&P 500.
So there's a distinction here between ALA owning individual stocks and ALA owning the portfolios that include individual stocks.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Colleagues, excuse me. We have 5 more minutes for this discussion because we must end at 4:30 so that the candidate forum can take place.
Okay, but just the one last point. That means that we could look at those portfolios and see those individual stocks. Is that correct?
Well, in some cases, that's what we've done with this list I provided at the back. Yeah, I think the trustees can do that, but it's not, you won't find those probably on a website. because they're not traded that way.
Microphone 3.
I've already spoken. I'll let the others.
Microphone 4.
Bob Holly, IR4T Councilor. I just have a quick question. I thought that an increase in interest rates would be bad for currently held bonds rather than what your slide said.
Well, bond prices and interest rates go in reverse.
I know. As interest rates go up, then current bonds are worth less.
Correct.
Because they don't. And
correct.
That isn't what your slide said, and I'm just curious.
I'm not sure about that. But if you hold large portfolios of bonds, you'll probably even out. But an individual bond, yes, will go up and down. But it depends on the maturity of it and other things.
Okay. I'll accept your answer.
Okay. We can talk offline about it a little bit.
Microphone 4.
John Sandstrom, Counselor at Large. For those of you interested, the investment policy statement is on the ALA website under ALA Governance Financial Data.
Roger, yes, thank you. For you. I now direct your attention to Council Document Number 26 and call upon Terry R. Switzer, Chair of the Nominating Committee for the 2015 ALA election, to present the committee's report. Terry.
Thank you, Madam President, and good afternoon, everybody. Before I give the report, I would like to acknowledge the members of our nominating committee. They are Sonia Alcantara Antoine, Jennifer Baxmeyer, Peter Bromberg, Erica Finley, Julius C. Jefferson Jr., Diane Chen Kelly, Todd Kruger, Anna Elba Pavone, and myself. And I would also like to acknowledge with heartfelt thanks Joanne Kemp, who served as the committee staff liaison. Okay, now to give you just a few highlights, because I know we're running short of time. This is, if you have Council Document 26, you can look at that. Throughout our work, the committee remained committed to presenting a slate of candidates for ALA president who possess the following traits and attributes: an outstanding ability to speak publicly and deal with media and legislation interactions on the state, national, and international levels, the leadership, management, and organizational skills for leading council and the executive board, and a strong ability to build consensus, the ability to see the broad ALA picture, and would have a thorough knowledge of all aspects of ALA, its governing bodies, units, and its procedures and goals. Someone who is passionate about libraries, our profession, our values, and ALA's mission, and can articulate our values and mission to others around the world. Someone who possesses fiscal experience and is knowledgeable of sizable budgets. Somebody who recognizes and voices the reality of our environment, circumstances, opportunities, and situations, and works toward moving the association forward, and is willing and able to advocate for libraries of all types. ALA counselor candidates come from 27 states, including the District of Columbia. They all represent library types, academic, public, school, and then others, which are special government library trustees and retirees. Women candidates outnumber men 2-1. And those from the Northeast and the Midwest make up the majority of the slate. On behalf of the committee, I want to thank President Young for our appointments. We greatly appreciate this opportunity to serve our profession and our professional association in this manner. And finally, I want to thank you, the ALA membership, for voting in past and in future elections. That concludes my report.
Are there any questions on this portion of the Nominating Committee's report? Seeing there are none, Terry, please continue.
Okay. The presidential candidates slated by the committee for the 2015 ALA election are Jamie LaRue, Chief Executive Officer, LaRue and Associates, Castle Rock, Colorado, and Julie B. Todaro, Dean of Library Services, Austin Community College, Austin, Texas. I know that both of them are here, and so if you would please stand. I believe Jamie is right over here, and Julie is right in the back. A list of the candidates for the position of ALA Counselor at Large is reflected in ALA Council Document 26.1.
Are there any questions for Ms. Switzer? Okay. ALA Bylaws Article 3, Section 3B provides that the ALA Nominating Committee shall also include on the official ballot other nominations filed with the Executive Director by petition of any 25 members of the Association at least 4 months before the annual conference, provided written consent of these nominees shall have been filed with the Executive Director of the Association. Petitions must be filed by February 6, 2015. Keith Michael Fields will report on any petitions received for the office of President-elect.
To date, petitions with consent have been filed for the office of ALA President-elect by Joseph Janes, Associate Professor at the University of Washington Information School in Seattle, Washington, and J.P. Picaro, Librarian for Acquisitions and Technology Discovery at New Jersey City University Library in Jersey City, New Jersey.
If these candidates are in the room, would you please stand? Thank you. Mr. Fields, have you received any petitions for the office of ALA Counselor at Large?
We have. To date, petitions with consent have been filed for the office of ALA Counselor at Large by Lauren Andrea Camito, JBA Manager at the Queen's Library in Jamaica, New York, Elizabeth Jean Brumfield, Distance Services Librarian at Prairie View A&M University in Houston, Texas, Nick Buron, Vice President, Public Library Services at the Queen's Library in New York, New York, Megan Elizabeth Drake, Systems and Applications Librarian at Pacific University in Portland, Oregon, Alfred Kagan, African Studies Bibliographer and Professor of Library Administration Emeritus at the University of Illinois, Urbana, Illinois, Kimberly Ann Patton, Youth Services Supervisor of the Kansas City, Kansas Public Library, and Eric D. Cease, Library Director at the Marshall Public Library in Pocatello, Idaho.
Thank you, Keith. Electronic balloting will begin on March 24th, 2015. Polls will close on May 1st, 2015 at 11:59 p.m. Central Time. We will know the results of the elections on May 8th, 2015. I again will call upon Keith Michael Fields for announcements. Keith?
Let me first of all report on midwinter meeting registration. As of the end of the day yesterday, registration currently stands at 7,040 registrants and 3,416 participants, exhibitors, for a grand total of 10,456. That's ahead of Seattle in 2013, where we had 9,622 at this time, and a little behind Philadelphia, where we had 11,261. I do have a couple of other last announcements. Based on Council's action at the 2014 annual conference, we're not printing as many documents as we have in the past. All Council documents will be posted to the Council page on ALA Connect throughout the midwinter meeting. Lois Ann will be sending an email to the Council list alerting you when documents have been posted, so please be sure to check your emails prior to coming to each Council meeting. A limited number of paper documents will be available at the Council document pickup table in this room. We will still be providing document portfolios for you to store any other documents you may collect during this midwinter meeting. Please be aware that although this room is a secure room, other meetings are also being held in it. You shouldn't leave computers or other valuables at your place or inside your portfolio. As the ALA Presidential Candidates Forum will be held in this room immediately following this meeting, we do ask that you please return your document portfolios to their storage boxes at the Council Documents pickup table located at the back of the room at the adjournment of this meeting. Thank you.
At
It is now 4:26 p.m. The ALA Council / Executive Board Membership Information Session stands adjourned. The ALA Presidential Candidates Forum will begin shortly. Thank you.